Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson. Hey, Fred, been looking out some old files. I was like cleaning out some areas and up popped a bathtub curve that I had from years ago. And I thought,
isn't that like required in every reliability presentation or book that it has to have the analogy to a bathtub somewhere in it?
Is it possible to have a conversation about reliability without a bathtub?
It is. Definitely is. I know it is. Because I avoid
it. What's interesting about this, I'm looking at, and I'll include this in the show notes, the PowerPoint. But in this particular slide that popped up that was in my archives, it was titled Actual Shape of a Bathtub Curve. Hmm. And it did not look like a bathtub. So that's what I thought would be fun to reflect on. And we talk about on the edges of this or even deeply into it on lots of different podcasts and articles throughout Ascendo. But what I wanted to share, it's well known to probably a lot of listeners and to yourself, is the components of failures that go into a, quote, bathtub curve and why. And then we can talk about why they usually, not always, but they usually don't follow the actual bathtub.
Well, you're going to get me going on this one. There's just way too many things that are just wrong with the analogy and oversimplifying it. And when just as a quick highlight, as I saw an article the other day that said this manufacturer is making thousands of widgets and they got a bad batch of bearings. And so a couple of hundred of their units got the wrong or defective bearings installed in them, and they got shipped. And they wore out very fast. Now, it's a bearing that's not right for the thing or has the wrong metallization, I don't remember the details of it, but these things wore out. They degraded their ability to be a bearing, and they failed. Now, the failure mechanism for those units was a wear out mechanism. The overall system, because it was a couple hundred out of thousands, looked like a decreasing failure rate. They had the spike in failures. And then as those hundred or so worked their way out of the system looked like it had a decreasing failure rate, which is the last thing you would do is go look for a wear out mechanism, even though it happened really fast. And so I thought that was a brilliant way to say, you still got to think about it. You still got to think about what level of the system you're looking at, what's the failure mechanisms that you can take action on, and so on. So I digress. But there's lots of oversimplification with the traditional bathtub curves that we see in everywhere.
Yeah, there is. So, and this could be its own, multiple podcasts and multiple articles, but let me just tell one story and maybe two stories and that fit into this.
I won't limit you. You can have three if you want.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one story, and I lament that I don't have the actual folder. I can see it in my mind's eye. I can remember it, the folder that I had that summarized the project. But years back, I'm going to say in probably the mid to late 90s, I had a student intern assigned to me, and we get those from time to time, and they're fun. We can send them on fun projects running around. And I thought to myself, I'm going to have this person do something that would be really useful. And that's to go find the data in the Milford Proving Grounds of failures that occur because GM ran all the different types of vehicles, Hondas, Toyotas, you name the brands, at a equivalent 100,000 miles around the test track. And then they recorded the failures and they recorded the causes of the failures. They actually did teardowns and they took these vehicles after they tore them down and they laid them out in a building that was as big as an airplane hangar that had long tables. And then they could lay out the vehicle and the different components in the same sequence, so people could come in and look and see the failures visibly. And so all that was in this database. And I said, go look at that database and tell me whether or not for different subsystems, for different areas of the vehicle, and for the vehicle itself, what was the failure rate by year? Was the first year the same as the second year, is the same as the third year? Is, you know, mm-hmm. how did it look? How did it plot? Mm-hmm. And so each of the, you take the chassis subsystem, or you take the seats, or you take whatever it is, interior would be the larger one, and do the same thing. And then you could do it overall for the vehicle. And interestingly enough, it turned out to be like a check mark. In actual fact, the empirical data looked more like a check mark than a bathtub. There was no period where we saw constant failure rate. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because I'd been to school and I'd done these classes, and I was just freshly a CRE and had studied the bathtub curve. And of course, there's the subject of random failures during the flat part of the bathtub and the all that.
Right.
Literature of the early failures and then the wear outs, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, that's interesting. We're not actually seeing it here. And this is a fairly large database on a period of time of many years where we did this type of testing. And I wish I had that same raw data, but the breakdown that came from that, that we studied later, is some failures are early, we'll call them initial performance. Some people call it quality or manufacturing. And that, if you just plotted those, if you could possibly get that root cause and plot those, then that's a decreasing failure rate. Starts out high, and then those tend to trail off. But how long does it take for it to trail off? In the theory of bathtubs, it trails off very quickly. I said, but I don't know if that's true. And so we got some insight into that. Then there's the, of course, the design, the root cause is somewhere in the product design. And then you get, is this a fatigue, or is it a corrosion, or is it wear out, or what other mechanism is going on?
Right.
And then that increases over time. But does it increase? Ideally, in the perfect world, it would go 10 years or more, and then you'd see the increase.
Right.
But in the real world, for us at least, we were seeing those wear outs early on in certain areas. And so that's what kept it from any possibility of that flat portion. And then there's service generated and other types of failures.
Right.
That's all.
So I think that's what muddles up this analogy to a bathtub, that there's these three phases and three distinct places to go look for types of failures. And it's a convenient analogy to talk about early life, random failures, or out of box type failures, random failures, and wear out. The trouble is that you can wear out on the first day.
Yes.
You know, underlying
fatigue on the first day.
You can. If it's a really bad design, you could lose all your products because they all are prone to corrosion. And within the first week, they all corrode. And that's the classic wear out mechanism. Mm-hmm. The failure mechanism doesn't look at the clock and say, I can't occur until 10 years from now. And, you know, and then I'm just going to hold off until, they're going to do what they're going to do. I think that is not reflected in the traditional bathtub curve. It says, well, all the wear out mechanisms, we just push those off to the right until it doesn't matter anymore. All right. Well, you have wear out mechanisms that are occurring from day one, and you got to deal with that. And it's part of the design. It's part of all this other stuff we do. But the, I saw a similar set of data. It was an email, I think last week, I saw from Backblaze. I use them for an online backup system for my computers, and they send me and they publish it too, is they have hundreds of thousands of these hard drives in different companies and different sizes and stuff like that, and they keep track of failures. I wish they would do time to failure so we had richer data, but they do like what you were talking about, is doing what's the failure rate per year and for these different systems. And it's anything but a bathtub curve, and it didn't have quite the checkmark view of it. I think it was because they're populating their system every year. So they, the failure rate is really mixed of really young machines and very old machines each year. And the theory is, Drenick's theorem would say that you would just level out to be a nice even pattern for that. And then it was anything but that.
Well, that you're right. That's the theory, is the particularly for complex systems.
Right.
I mean, I think everybody acknowledged even back in the day when the bathtub had a lot of advocates, they acknowledged that an individual component is not going to follow a bathtub necessarily, but when you get complex systems, it would. I've only seen in my career really, and this, I'm just remembering, there's probably more than one, but I remember one very definite where I actually saw a bathtub on system data, mm-hmm. and I'm sure there's others, but it's not prevalent.
Not at all.
In my opinion.
Not at all. No, I agree with you. I've seen that check mark or hockey stick very often at a system level. I've also seen where it's one of the one that Dick Moss used to use to discuss what's the to drive home how do you think about failures over time. He used the human mortality by age, and 10-year-olds are nearly invincible. Apparently they bounce real well when they fall down. But there really is a lot of things that affect young children. If you make it to the first week, you're very much more likely to make it to the first month and so on. It's the first mm-hmm. part of the human life, first couple of years, it's pretty perilous actually. And mm-hmm. it's gotten better over time and it's flattening out a little bit. We're having fewer and fewer early childhood death for all kinds of different reasons. But the overall data is there is this thing of infant mortality, and it decreases until about age 10. And then it's kind of slowly rising from there. And some would argue it's flat, but it's changing every year. It moves up until you get to age 16 in Europe and US anyway, where I had the data. There's a step function. There's like a step function of increase in mortality. And it was associated with traffic accidents. Now you have this new peril that shows up, and now it's there. And then after that, it just kind of slowly heads up until you're about 35, and then it ramps up pretty quick, and then it just, you're over the hill at that point. It just keeps, every year it gets less and less likely you'll see the next year. And so it's not exactly a bathtub curve by any means. It's not smooth at all. It's got bumps and features, and it and a big enough data set with enough different people with all these different pieces in it. When you dive into it, into the details of it, there's young people can get lung cancer, which you're much more likely to get at and die from it when you're old, and so on. And there were other things that were much more likely for accidents, sporting accidents, for example, driving accidents when you're young versus old, and so on. And there was it. At an aggregate level, it still didn't look like a bathtub curve. It had the elements that we would often associate with it. But when I look at a car or a hard drive or anything else that has multiple failure mechanisms, it never, I haven't seen any that were that terribly close. Usually it's a V or a check mark where it's a very light early failure period of decrease, and then it just takes off. Some failure mechanism dominates and tears up everything.
Right. And I know you've podcasted on this a number of times, and you're right about it, and so have I. Why it's so common that people get attracted to the constant failure rate, and of course the answer is it's really easy. The mathematics are much easier. Mm-hmm. Everything is so nice if you can just assume the constant failure rate. So I think that's why the bathtub becomes attractive to people, because it's easy to teach. The mathematics are much simpler. And
I don't think it's just the math. I think we got engineering folks doing differential equations, so I don't think they're afraid of the math. I think it's wishful thinking. We're going to design it so that we're going to have just random failures that we can't control, lightning strikes and meteors falling on it, or, you know, things like that. And everything else is going to fail much, much later. And I don't think that's how it works, you guys.
No, it isn't. You know? It isn't. See, here's a quiz for listeners. If you could just have fun with this, if you're listening. If let's say you're setting up a reliability allocation system, and I'm going to build this little 2-minute quiz or less off of the what we did years ago in automotive. There was this metric called defects per 1,000 vehicles, and defects per 1,000 vehicles were meant to parallel warranty. And one of the goals of automotive was to be world class on first year warranty, and thereby have like no more than one incident was the DPTV target for 1 year. And then the from that, the reliability group back then, this is before I took over, said that's very simple. So we're going to set our reliability goals for 10 years. Of course, it's gone on since then to 12 and 15 years. But for 10 years, it's very easy now because we just take the DPTV for 1 year and multiply by 10. And then they allocated the reliability all over the place. So they took the actual warranty and said, okay, you've got door hinges. Warranty says we have this number of failures in the field during the warranty period, which some was used to be 1 year and then got to 3 years. And so that's your DPTV target is to do half of that or something.
Right.
And then the reliability people could say, well, that's really easy. We'll give you your reliability target to be a multiple of that. And so it went throughout the organization. And if you're a listener, what's wrong with that? What would you, if you were to say in 5 words, what's wrong with that? That would be the quiz. And I bet most of our listeners will get that quiz right.
I'm trying to think of what's the Jeopardy music.
Yes. Dun, dun, da, 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 da. Or maybe that's a $64,000 question.
Or something. Yeah. Yeah. We got to play a little jingle here somewhere.
Well, what's wrong with it, of course, and I had actual client, and I won't give any names here because it's they were way off, but they did their vehicle testing over 1 year because it was cheaper. And then they extrapolated to 10 years using the same mathematics. Mm-hmm. And of course, the reason that it's wrong is because you don't have a constant failure rate. You have to know what the failure mechanisms are, and you have to know what the distribution is, the failure distribution, in order to go from 1 year to 10 years. And without that, it's just erroneous mathematics. And it's based on wrong assumptions. So that would be the answer to the quiz. And I bet most everybody got it, but I wanted to share that story because that was real life. That went on for a number of years of that kind of thinking. And sure enough, we had much worse results in the field than we anticipated because of that constant failure rate assumption.
Oh, yeah. No, I would have been shocked if they you know, hit it on the head. It's not that it's old thinking or it doesn't happen anymore. I not that long ago, and I suspect they're still doing it, is this organization basically disregarded any early failures as, well, that was just infant mortality, that was a manufacturing problem. They waved their arms and they didn't count them. They never did any analysis on it. They said, oh, we got to fix that, or we need a new supplier or whatever. They would take action on some of those things, but they didn't include it in the system reliability information and tracking of it. And he says, well, it's not in the constant part of the bathtub curve. It's not in the useful life period, so it doesn't really matter. And then as they started getting wear outs, they said, well, it's not in the useful, it's interfering with the useful life thing, so we'll disregard that data. So
yeah, that's a one-off.
That's a one-off thing. We got to go replace all these pumps, but we won't include that in the system stuff. So they, it's like out-of-box failures. A lot of organizations that I've run into is, if it's a customer gets your product and it's broken from shipping, or it just doesn't work when you first try to use it, or it's, you know, whatever reason, they call it a quality problem and don't count it against the reliability. And it costs you money. It's a problem. If the marketing and setting the expectations is wrong, it's still a failure. It doesn't mean that the light didn't come on. If it was the wrong shade of light, it's a problem. It's a failure. And it was really hard to get people to understand that. If it costs you money, it was a warranty charge. of course it's reliability.
It should be at the top of your list of lessons learned is never discount a failure. Don't ignore a failure. Don't talk it away. There's always a reason for it.
Yep.
And boy, I can't remember who taught me that back in the 1980s.
Well, I'll take credit for it. I'll take credit for
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking it might have come from HP because I read a lot from some of the early HP.
Oh, yeah. Dick Moss, Iris Coombs and Moss's book. Yeah. And others. Yep. Yeah.
And it's just always, if a failure happens, it has to be counted. It has to be kept. Now you can root cause it and then fix it and then discount it at that point if you wish.
It's still part of the record, though. It's still
start of the record, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I ran into organizations where they just say, well, we don't count early life failures, or we don't, if it's a customer abuse. Well, what's customer abuse? Well, vast majority of the problems we get are customer abuse, so we don't count those. Okay.
And I know we're running right towards the point of the end of the podcast, but let me just add two things that add into this check mark or the non-bathtub curve is features that, or call it initial performance, that customers don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll bring things in for warranty, even though you can't do anything about the design. It's that they just don't like the fact that it does this or that.
Right.
And so that gets intermixed in. And the other one that is very hard to tease out is service generated. Those that get added in to the because of a service visit and somebody does something a little wrong or what have you. So you have complex reasons for failures, and they just don't follow that that constant failure rate portion of the bathtub curve, unless we redefine a bathtub and have it more like a check mark.
Well, check mark or mountain range is.
Or mountain range.
Yeah.
Or there's a sine wave.
Yeah. No, it's not anything but flat. And we've got the tools and capability to look at it, and assuming it away is not going to help. It's using it as an analogy to help people learn stuff is okay. Yet I think it's dangerous. Is you got to quickly move on and show some real data and get into the details of what works and what's the nature of failures. And when we're looking at failure rates, what are we actually trying to do with it? It's not force it into a constant hazard rate. That's just not useful for us or anybody else.
And so. That really is the lesson, is allow a textbook or some literature to create the assumption for you. Use your own, get your own data as quickly as you can so that you're operating off of data and relevant failure distributions. And I don't mean to demean textbooks, because most textbooks are smart enough to understand all this. But I just mean don't pick one little portion of it and assume that that's going to be correct for you. Always look to see what is it that reflects the failure distribution of your product.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like you said earlier, Carl, I'm kind of spinning here going, oh, we could have this topic. We can go this way and go that way. So lots going on. And if this rings true to you, if it makes sense, if Kirk's going to chime in on this one going, the bathtub has a hole in it because of technological obsolescence. The iWatches don't last 20 years. Because they get replaced and outmoded, and they work perfectly fine, or would work perfectly fine if they were compatible. But we technologically obsolete them. Cell phones are doing that. Cars used to do that. We've just kept adding more and more feature sets. So you got to have the newest, latest thing, and the old one doesn't wear out. It just kind of gets thrown away, which is unfortunate. But anyway, if you'd like to chime in, tell us, if you've got a question or a comment, or if you've seen some, great data one way or the other, please join the conversation. You can see it, do that over on ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there you can find a way to leave us a voice message, or you can leave a written message. You can find Carl and I and the other hosts of the show on LinkedIn or on our about pages on the site. There's lots of ways for you to join the conversation. So good topic, Carl. I'm going to hopefully the failure density for the rest of my day is relatively low so that I can ignore it. And we'll move on from there.
Yeah, very good. I'll take a walk, and I'm probably going to take a walk up a hill rather than a constant
constant flight. You're in Florida. How is that going to be possible?
Well, there's some nice artificial hills. We got trails that where you have to go up over a
overpass,
a road. So you're hiking up. We just go up and down, then turn around, go up and down. Because you have to sort of invent your hills in Florida.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that, Carl. And enjoy the view, because I'm sure it'll be good.
Yep.
All right. Well, talk to you later, Carl. Take care.
Talk later, Fred. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.